this very simple solution of fining Russia 20% of all its natural gas exports to Europe in order to fund the reconstruction of Ukraine, punish Putin, and hopefully bring a quicker end to this war.
Well, we want to thank you for your analysis, Alfred McCoy, professor of history at University of Wisconsin-Madison. Most recent book, To Govern the World, The Globe, World Orders and Catastrophic Change. We'll link to your piece in Tom Dispatch, How to End the War in Ukraine, A Solution Beyond Sanctions. Democracy Now! Has an immediate opening for a news writer-producer. Visit democracynow.org/jobs to find out more. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
April is Jazz Appreciation Month, and KBOO Community Radio is very proud to be the first FM station in the state of Oregon to program jazz. Let's celebrate KBOO's diverse jazz programming and the jocks who volunteer their talent to share their love of jazz music. Jazz Appreciation Month, or JAM as it's affectionately known, represents a sweet spot in the lives of KBOO's music lovers. So join us on Wednesdays, noon to 4, and Saturdays, 2 to 5, throughout the month of April, as we toast America's greatest art form here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an audit of Multnomah County Jail finds black inmates face disproportionate discipline. Primary ballots go out in Oregon today. And a Guardian report finds that inflation masks windfall corporate profits. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Inmates in Multnomah County Jail who are black or who have a mental illness face disproportionate discipline and violence, according to a new audit. The Multnomah County Auditor's Office did the investigation and looked at conditions in the jails from 2018 to 2021. 19% of inmates with mental illness were placed in isolation as punishment, compared to 7% of inmates who don't have mental illness. The audit was in part prompted by a 2017 report by Disability Rights Oregon, which demonstrated the poor conditions that people with mental illness face behind bars. Those impacts haven't changed much, according to the new audit. Black inmates in Multnomah County Jail were twice as likely to be subjected to force by officers than non-black inmates. In a survey of incarcerated people, black inmates said they felt less safe with corrections officers than inmates of other races. The audit also makes recommendations about how to improve their conditions. They recommend eliminating isolation punishment and hiring outside help for addressing cultural competency issues and race implicit bias. Sheriff Mike Reese would not commit to removing isolation punishment as an option, but said that his office was reviewing the jail's disciplinary practices. Oregonians will soon start to receive their ballots for the May 17th primary election, and food insecurity will be a consideration for many as they vote. Root causes of hunger, such as high housing costs, are affecting people's ability to put food on the table. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Ballots will start to be mailed out today for Oregon's primary election, and one issue sure to be on voters' minds is hunger. Food insecurity had been dropping prior to COVID-19. Down to about 1 in 10 Oregonians, according to Mark Edwards with Oregon State University. He says the pandemic put major stresses on families, but credits bolstering the safety net for helping out so many. However, many supports, especially at the federal level, have gone away. Edwards notes Oregonians also face new pressures that could keep them from putting food on the table.
the dramatic increases in the price of housing, particularly rents. Lower income households are facing some really significant challenges right now, being able to make ends meet.
Edwards notes that communities of color disproportionately feel the effects of food insecurity, with rates typically double those of white households. He says rural communities also face challenges. Ballots for the primary election are due by May 17th. Susanna Morgan heads Oregon Food Bank. She says the number of people asking for food assistance spiked at the beginning of the pandemic and has come down a bit since then. But she adds even getting back to pre-pandemic levels of hunger would still mean, as she puts it, tolerating the intolerable.
So I would ask us to continue leaning into the public policies that address the root causes of hunger, which are living wages and access to affordable quality health care and access to affordable quality housing.
Morgan says the issue of hunger is more urgent than ever for candidates to address in the primary election. Oregon Food Bank, which is a nonpartisan nonprofit, surveyed candidates for governor about food insecurity. Morgan says the election results matter.
It's really important for us to understand where the candidates come from as to how they will address the root causes of hunger, and then to urge people to consider that in their decisions about who they are going to choose to vote for.
Responses to the survey are posted on Oregon Food Bank's website. This is the first in a four-part series about hunger ahead of the May 17th primary. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
TriMet is facing its biggest staffing shortage in history. The lack of drivers has caused delays along some routes. Hundreds left during the pandemic. Many reasons have been cited, including wanting a better work-life balance, too much overtime during the pandemic, retirement, and more physical and verbal assaults on drivers. The agency needs about 300 new transit operators. TriMet has tried to mitigate the problem. It increased starting pay from about $17 per hour in the fall to more than $25 an hour, a 46% increase. As a result, more applications have come in. But that hasn't been enough to reverse the shortage. Applicants starting out don't have to have a commercial driving license. They do need a clean driving record. TriMet offers a 7-week training course, which is fully paid. At the end of the course, drivers earn their commercial license. Bus drivers can reach a top pay rate of $68,000 after 3 years of work, with more available if they work overtime. However, some worry the pay raises are temporary. Amalgamated Transit Union Local 757 spokesman Bill Bradley said, quote, "It could be rescinded should it become ineffective or doesn't get renewed during bargaining," end quote. The union expects to start contract negotiations with TriMet at the end of the year. Some California residents will be facing new water restrictions because of the drought. Yesterday, officials in Los Angeles, Ventura, and San Bernardino counties declared a water shortage emergency and adopted unprecedented restrictions on outdoor watering that will affect millions of people. The restrictions, which take effect in June, will limit outdoor watering to just one day per week and will severely limit how much water people can use to water their lawns or wash cars. California is bracing for its third consecutive year of severe drought, with 2022 already setting the record for the least precipitation for the start of the year. These restrictions may increase if the supply wanes further, with authorizations already in place to prohibit all non-essential outdoor irrigation as early as September 1st. A new study by The Guardian outlines how, as U.S. inflation rose, so did profits for major U.S. corporations. Their analysis of Securities and Exchange Commission filings for 100 U.S. corporations found net profits went up by a median of 49%, and in one case, as much as 111,000%. Corporations passed on most or all inflationary costs to customers via price increases, and some increased prices even more. 90 of these companies engaged in massive stock buyback programs or bumped dividends to enrich investors. Lindsay Owen is the executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative, which tracks corporate profits. Owen says companies are using the pandemic, war, and supply chain problems as a smokescreen for price increases. The Guardian's analysis found commodity companies trading in oil, timber, rubber, meat, wheat, steel, and mining recorded the highest profit increases, while restaurants and retailers saw comparatively lower improvements or losses. Also helping the price increases is the lack of competition in many industries due to consolidation. For example, Four large grain producers control about 90% of the market. Senator Bernie Sanders, who last month began a push to bring back a windfall profit tax, said, quote, "The American people are sick and tired of being ripped off by corporations making record-breaking profits while working families are forced to pay outrageously high prices for gas, rent, food, and prescription drugs," end quote. Rand Paul and Anthony Blinken spar over Russia's motives in Ukraine, and Biden issues his first presidential pardons. With more on these stories, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Had Ukraine been in NATO, as you've advocated for and many others have advocated for, we would now have troops in Ukraine.
At a congressional hearing, Republican Senator Rand Paul suggested the Biden administration is responsible for the Russian invasion of Ukraine because it supported Ukraine's wishes to join NATO. Secretary of State Antony Blinken pushed back, arguing the conflict happened because Russia doesn't want Ukraine to remain sovereign.
One country can't dictate to another the choices it makes about with whom it allies, its foreign policies, its decision or not to try to engage with the European Union, with NATO.
President Joe Biden pardoned three people, including Abraham Bolden, the former Secret Service agent who became the first African-American to serve on a presidential detail. He was charged with attempting to sell a secret file, but always maintained his innocence. In his first presidential acts of clemency, Biden also commuted the sentences of 75 people. The White House says Vice President Kamala Harris, who tested positive for COVID, has not been in close contact with Biden. And new White House COVID-19 response coordinator Dr. Ashish Jha notes the U.S. is at an inflection point in the pandemic.
We have a lot more capabilities, a lot more tools to protect the American people. Testing, vaccines, therapeutics.
Despite a recent rise in infections, both hospitalizations and deaths are down. Economists with Deutsche Bank are predicting a major recession by next year, suggesting that in order to quell inflation, the Federal Reserve will raise rates so aggressively it will hurt the economy. On Tuesday, the Dow Jones fell 800 points. A U.S. Senate committee began debate on two bills to help smaller cattle producers by increasing federal oversight of large meat packers.
The big guys are muscling out the newer, smaller meat processors who simply can't compete, which leaves both farmers and families in a very difficult situation.
That's Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow of Michigan, who cited consolidation and lack of competition for vulnerabilities in the food supply chain. North Carolina Congressman Madison Cawthorn was cited for bringing a loaded handgun through a TSA checkpoint in Charlotte. It's the second time in a year that the Republican has been stopped by airport officials while carrying a gun. The House January 6th committee is reviewing House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy's leaked phone calls from days after the attack, where he expresses concerns that former President Donald Trump would seek a pardon.
I do not want to get into any conversation about him pardoning. The only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass, and it would be my recommendation we should be done.
Talks of a pardon could suggest that Trump had obstructed justice in some way. Most Republicans called the tapes a distraction. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Last month, Vladimir Putin announced that customers for Russian natural gas had to pay in rubles or have their supply cut off. This week, Gazprom, the Russian state-owned energy company, cut off gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria. Poland has taken in more Ukrainian refugees than any other nation, while Bulgaria gets 75% of its natural gas from Russia. The Dutch TTF price for gas delivery is a benchmark for Europe. It has risen 15% in the 2 days since Russia's cutoff of the two countries. The European Commission has said that complying with Russia's request could breach EU sanctions, though companies could pay the Gazprom bank in euros or dollars before being converted to rubles. The question now is whether Russia will cut off supplies to other nations, particularly larger consumers like Germany and Italy. You're listening to a spring membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Piper McDaniel from Street Roots about an investigative report showing how Oregon's tax code goes unexamined and the state loses billions as a result. At 6, it's The Underground. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 44 degrees. Tomorrow, expect scattered showers and a high of 53. Today in history, in 1989, students led massive protests in major cities across China called the April 17th demonstrations. They were protesting an editorial which accused their movement of being anti-party. In between 50 and 200,000 students turned out in Beijing, eventually breaking the police line into Tiananmen Square. The quote of the day is from American author and civil rights leader Coretta Scott King, who was married to Martin Luther King Jr. She was born today in 1927. She said, "Freedom and justice cannot be parceled out in pieces to suit political convenience. I don't believe you can stand for freedom for one group of people and deny it to others." Governor Ron DeSantis has taken swift action, enacting policies that dismantle efforts to promote diversity and inclusion, instead claiming they encourage discrimination. Critics worry DeSantis is more focused on grabbing headlines in a bid for the presidency, diving deeper into the political playbook of former President Donald Trump. Trimmel Gomes has more on the story.
Governor Ron DeSantis has been confronting a lot of issues dealing with race and inclusion. The latest is his signing into law his version of Florida's new congressional district maps, which heavily benefits Republicans and slashes the number of black districts in half, from 4 to 2. DeSantis claims those districts were racially gerrymandered, but his proposed race-neutral map caused a sit-in protest by mostly black lawmakers in the Florida House at the end of the redistricting special session. Here's Representative Angie Nixon, a Democrat from Jacksonville.
Ron DeSantis is disrespectful. Ron DeSantis is a bully.
Yep.
Ron DeSantis does not care about black people. I will not bite my tongue. There is an incessant attack on black people in the state of Florida.
The League of Women Voters of Florida and a number of Democratic-aligned redistricting groups filed suit the same day the governor signed his maps into law. The League successfully challenged the state during the last redistricting process, and its president now vows to fight for the voters and voices of hundreds of thousands of black voters. The DeSantis administration also stirred controversy when it announced a ban of 54 of 132 math textbooks it said included references to critical race theory and other prohibited topics, but offered no details. Bacardi Jackson with the Southern Poverty Law Center says she thinks it's ongoing pushback from the Black Lives Matter movement that sparked conversations about the impact of systemic and structural racism.
We seem to be in an era and a moment that says white supremacy now, white supremacy always. We will resist every effort to make our society diverse. We will resist every effort.
Jackson filed a public records request for administration to reveal its criteria for rejecting books. The Department of Education only lists 4 examples on its website and is unclear about specific concerns. DeSantis has long pledged to take a stand against what he calls state-sanctioned racism, and on Friday he signed into law what he calls the Stop Woke Act, which restricts how race is discussed in schools, colleges, and workplaces. DeSantis also signed a bill just days after it was introduced, revoking the Walt Disney Company's special district status in the state. Attorney Daniel Ulfelder is a former Republican turned Democratic activist and candidate for Attorney General. He says the move is reckless.
That seems to be a pattern with the leadership we have, where they make these very quick, rash, impulsive decisions when someone or something does something that they don't agree with. And that is a dangerous precedent.
Tax experts and legislators say eliminating the district could have unintended consequences for county taxpayers, underscoring Ulfelder's point that the decision needed the careful analysis of experts, not a surprise issue for lawmakers in a special session to address congressional redistricting. This is Trimmel Gomes for Florida News Connection.
A federal court has kept alive a lawsuit between Native Americans and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. They accused a healthcare provider of overcharging and mismanaging Native health plans. With that story and more, it's Shirley Jihad with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Shirley Jihad, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A federal appeals court reversed a lower court ruling and is keeping alive a lawsuit brought by Native Americans against Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. That lawsuit accuses Blue Cross of mismanaging tribe-affiliated health plans and overcharging them for health care. The Saginaw Chippewa Tribe of Michigan brought the suit to the federal appeals court, saying Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan charged hidden fees and overstated costs. Dozens of tribes around the country are backing the suit because they depend on Medicare-like rates in their insurance programs as well. The appeals court ruled the lower court acted in error. That district court threw out the tribe's lawsuit and made a summary judgment in favor of Blue Cross. After losing in court, a Nevada tribe is going directly to a California archaeological company and urging it to stop digging at a site considered sacred. The excavation at Thacker Pass is a step in the process to begin construction of a lithium mine, as the Nevada Current reports. The Reno Sparks Indian Colony sent a letter to the Far Western Anthropological Research Group. It calls on the company, in the tribal leader's words, to stop the desecrating of Thacker Pass for corporate greed. The letter compares the action to excavating Pearl Harbor or Arlington National Cemetery. Tribal history documents the site, now on federal BLM land, as the location of a massacre of Paiute men, women, and children by U.S. soldiers in 1865. Staff at radio station KEYA in Belcourt, North Dakota, say they may be able to return to the air at lower power in the next couple of days. That after their broadcast tower collapsed. The station is owned and operated by the Turtle Mountain Chippewa Tribe. Station officials say ice buildup during a blizzard, combined with high winds, caused the more than 300-foot tower to buckle. Support wires kept the upper portion of the tower upright, but emergency workers were forced to cut power to the 19,000-watt transmitter and antenna that broadcast the station's signal. KEYA started broadcasting in 1976, making it one of the oldest Native-owned stations. Legislation in California would rename the University of California Hastings Law School, removing its namesake, Serenus Clinton Hastings, because of his role in attempted genocide of California Native tribes. Christina Onnested reports.
Lawmakers and Native American tribes gathered in support of the bill to rename the University of California Hastings College of the Law.
Serenus Hastings paid for militias that brought genocide and atrocities upon the California Indian people in the Eden and Round Valley and brought turmoil to the Yuki Indian people.
Assemblymember James Ramos is the only Native American on the state assembly and an author of AB 1936.
The deadly means that Hastings used to build his wealth and help fund the law school has received little scrutiny until now.
Serenus Hastings went on to become California's first Supreme Court Chief Justice and Attorney General. James Russ, president of the Round Valley Tribal Council, spoke in favor of the legislation to strip Hastings from the school's name.
This took 140 years for this to come to the forefront, but everything happens for a reason, and this is the forefront right now.
The bill also includes restorative justice provisions for the Yuki and Round Valley people. I'm Christina Onnested, reporting for National Native News.
With National Native News, I'm Shirley Jihad.
One California ranch is preparing for an all-electric future, buying charging stations to prepare for large-scale electric farm equipment. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. On farms across the country, diesel tractors emit carbon dioxide and other air pollution. So Don Cameron, general manager of Terra Nova Ranch in California, wants all of his farm's tractors to run on electricity.
I think the possibility is out there to really electrify almost every piece of equipment that we run on farm.
The farm has already invested in small electric utility vehicles, but large electric tractors and other heavy-duty farm equipment are not on the market yet. Big machines require a lot of power, so to keep them running all day would take a lot of battery storage, which is expensive and heavy. But EV and battery technologies are improving.
And we also know that some of the large equipment makers are also looking at electrifying tractors, so I think we're all pulling in the same direction.
So to prepare for the coming transition, Cameron's team is working with a company called Grid Tractor to analyze how electric equipment could be integrated into farm operations. And they plan to start installing charging stations on the farm.
We know that our future is going to be electric. We are investing money in it now so that we can be ready for the future.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Working from home has become a standard practice in modern life. As millions of residents continue to telecommute, health experts are urging them to take a closer look at their home office setups. Jonah Chester has more on the story in Illinois.
Many Illinoisans find themselves still working from home, and ergonomic and health experts say it's past time to take a more critical look at their home office setup and daily work practices. A 2016 analysis by the United States Bone and Joint Initiative estimates 1 in 2 U.S. adults suffer from musculoskeletal disorders. Dr. Nikki Wiener with the Rising Workplace, an ergonomic consulting agency which operates in Chicago and other major cities, says the pandemic-induced pivot to working from home and a general decline in physical activity likely increased these problems.
These conditions are cumulative in nature. So it could be something that initially bothers you every now and again to the point where it's a persistent issue that keeps you from performing your job.
She suggests a few simple steps to prevent posture-related health issues, including focusing on good posture and staying active. In equipping a home office, she says an adjustable office chair is important and computer screen should be raised to near eye level. In a September 2021 Gallup poll, nearly half of respondents indicated they were still working from home at least part of the time. Dr. Russell Amundson with United Healthcare says it's important for a home office to have proper ergonomic equipment.
There's been a shift to telecommuting, which seems to have become persistent, the so-called hybrid work space. So folks have surrendered or been removed from more ergonomically designed workspaces with good office chairs, with good support, and of course the appropriate height desk.
The Bone and Joint Initiative report says musculoskeletal ailments cost an estimated $213 billion in annual treatment, care, and lost wages pre-pandemic. According to the World Health Organization, more than 1.7 billion people worldwide suffer from a musculoskeletal ailment, and lower back pain is the leading cause of disability in 160 countries. For the Illinois News Connection, I'm Jonah Chester.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is more scared than usual about Ukraine.
Like many, I'd hoped the Ukraine war would settle quickly, but the more you know of that region's history, the sketchiness of the borders, and the current global economy, the scarier I get. Just learned yesterday about Transnistria, a long, narrow Russian-identifying part of Moldova on the western border of Ukraine. Also yesterday, Russia cut off on natural gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria because they won't pay in rubles and only coincidentally have taken in many Ukrainian refugees, at least it's spring and not winter. While Putin needs rubles to help the sanctioned and isolated Russian economy and himself, he may just be looking for something he can escalate against. Can we bring a fiercer COVID back and take Russia out of our headlines in the future? There's no vaccine for territorial aggression, because how would it be more profitable than weapon sales? And as if most of the countries on Russia's western border joining NATO wasn't provocative enough, the last on NATO stretch, Finland, is applying to join up. What could possibly go right? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, April 27th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and myself, Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Shirley Jihad, Trimble Gomes, Jonah Chester, Eric Tegetoff, Mary Sherman, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 8, it's Sojourner Truth Radio. At 9, With Good Reason. At 10, it's American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler. Then at 11, it's Jonesy interviewing author Sean Levy on his new book, In on the Joke, The Original Queens of Stand-Up Comedy. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our spring membership Hive Drive, so it's a great time to support us. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. Today, I'm speaking with Street Roots investigative reporter Piper McDaniel about a recent piece that looked into Oregon's tax code. Tax day has come and gone this year, but its impacts haven't. An audit by the Secretary of State found that the state rarely re-examines its tax breaks, and that certain tax expenditures significantly disadvantage lower-income and BIPOC communities. A Street Roots investigation expanded the tax provisions that could fall into that category. So, Piper, we're here talking about your April 13th article, Oregon Doesn't Evaluate Vast Majority of Tax